galloped from the blizzard, guiding a shaggy Ungol pony by the stirrups as he drew back on a recurved bow. Coloured tassels shivered from the bow's tips as the rider loosed. The feathered shaft zipped through the falling snow and smacked through the Y-shaped opening of a marauder's bull-horned barboot with a ferocious clang as the metal head exited the back of the man's skull and struck the inside back of his war-helm. The marauder spasmed backwards, as though his corpse was trying to work out how to run before he was dashed against the breast of the careening pony. A second Kislevite horse archer chivied his horse through the Shanghai snowdrift, screaming "Yah!" at the top of his lungs and drawing back on his own bowstring. The arrow flew over Gotrek's shoulder and took his assailant through the heart. Gotrek howled pure frustration and beheaded the dying Northman. Another centaur-like shadow breezed in false silence through the blizzard and charged into the disordered Northmen. What had seemed a certain massacre became a rout. The Kurgan were running, and the Kislevites yipped and urged their steeds on to give chase. Gotrek growled and sank to one knee. He caught himself on the haft of his axe and pushed himself back up. Felix offered no help. He could not have supported the slayer's weight, even if he thought his aid would be welcomed. The slayer met his look and nodded grimly, lowering his own axe at last.
"Aye, manling. I thought I had it for a moment there."
Felix smiled. He doubted there were many men who could understand why a dwarf might be less than thrilled at surviving such a battle. But Felix and Gotrek had shared much that was unusual. They were as near to friends as it was possible for members of two such different races to be. And strangely enough, he had come to share his companion's disappointment. "There'll be more out there." Gotrek's grim look passed and he chuckled, running the pad of his thumb down the edge of his axe until it produced a bead of blood. It was one of the few parts of the slayer's body that was not already bleeding.
"Oh, it is the end of the world, after all."
"Yeah, that's the spirit," said Felix. Man and dwarf both turned towards the Linsk as the tramp of hooves and the jingle of tack turned from the pursuit and galloped towards them. Just from the sound of it, Felix could tell that it was a larger beast than the rugged steppe's ponies ridden by the horse archers. The runes of Gotrek's axe painted the falling snow a baleful red as he watched a snow-white Reichland Destrier trot into view. It carried the nobility of its breeding with the force and assuredness of an emperor. It deserved a satin caparison, a harness of pure silver, and a knight in shining full plate. But somehow the warrior austerity of its leather saddle and tack was appropriate, and the woman who reined it in and turned towards them was as striking in her own way as any knight of the Reichsguard. She was almost as tall as Felix, and though unhelmed, garbed in a gleaming Hobergian crafted from lamellar plates of white steel. Knee-high leather riding boots encased her legs. Despite the cold, she wore neither hat nor gloves, and her pale skin was laced with blue veins. He looked up, already knowing whose face he would see. This was a dream. The realization was as sudden as it was obvious. It hurt like a blow to the ribs. Of course it was a dream. The woman looked down from the saddle, chin tilted proudly upwards. Her short hair was blonde as ash and railed against the wintry conditions of her homeland. She had not aged a day. The slayer hefted his axe warningly.
"What's she doing here?"
Felix had no answer. Assuming that this was a dream, then her presence was obviously his doing. Unfortunately, it was one thing to recognize that one was dreaming, and quite another to act on that knowledge or make sense of it. He had loved her, would always love her. But she had been lost. The pain struck him like new. He had lost so many good friends while he and Gotrek ploughed on, but none still hurt him in the same way that she could. The woman bared sharp, inhuman teeth. Her smile was colder than the oblast and more feral than any Kurgan. Dream or no dream, Felix felt sure that she, if no one else, still knew how to hurt him. His surroundings began to slip away. Gotrek's scowl sank into blackness. The horse archers and the ongoing battle grew distant and dim, and even the cold was blunted before it reached his skin. He tried to cling on to it, even the cold, but it was as if there were cracks in his very soul, like some ancient Nehekaran urn that would leak empty as fast as it could be filled. No, he thought, sensing wakefulness like a remembered dream. No, there is nothing for me there. Ulrika!
It is all right, Felix,
the vampire smiled.
I will wait for you.
Weak autumnal sunlight slanted through the casement window and across the oak desk, where Felix's face lay on its side and half buried in parchment. The early strains of arguments and of passing horses intruded from the street beneath his window. The study in his family's Altdorf home was east-facing, the better for Felix to suffer early, and hateful little splinters of light shot off the uneven glass into his eyes. Felix buried his face under his arm with a groan, disturbing his delicate filing system and sending parchments sheeting to the floor. Eyes duly covered, he sank deeper over the desk. It smelled of iron gall ink, tannins from leather bindings, and from a more recent spillage of sweet apple schnapps. His dream was a world away, but it remained so vivid he could still feel the snow on his face and the weight of Karaghul in his hands. His thumping skull made him grimace. He certainly ached as if he had just spent the night painting the oblast of Kislev red. This, he concluded, though arguably several hours too late, was what became of men his age, drinking themselves to unconsciousness upon their desks. Grudgingly, he withdrew his arm from his face. The unkind sunlight glanced off the band of dwarf gold on his ring finger. He studied it like a man hypnotized. Angular dwarfish script ran around the outside. With his thumb, he turned the ring around his finger, watching the sun highlight one rune after the next. He never had asked Gotrek what it said. This is my life now, Felix thought. He wondered if there was any schnapps left in the bottle.
Felix!
The voice was the hangover that followed the excesses of his dream. It was a woman's voice, but not at all like Ulrika's. The accent was that of a Drakvald peasant, rather than of a boyar's daughter, and had not the noble woman's confidence or strength.
I know you are awake, Felix. I can see your eyes open.
Cat. Felix grunted something that he had intended to be intelligible, and levered himself up from the desk and into the back of his chair. The sudden rush of blood to the right side of his face made him wince. Cat held by the study door. She had been young once. Still was, really. 20 years, Felix's junior. But their battle with Heinrich Kemmler had worn her. Her skin was drawn, her hair brittle like straw. The brown of her eyes seemed to be sinking into the white. The Bretonian silk chemise she wore had been a sumptuous fit when it had belonged to his brother's wife, Annabella, but on Cat it draped like a robe. That Felix had recovered from the Lichmaster's magic, while she did not, was a mystery that baffled every physician in Altdorf. Even Max Schreiber had been at a loss. She bit her lip, as if there was something she wanted to say, but she would not meet his eye. Instead, her gaze took in the clutter of manuscripts, books, dropped clothes and old plates. Annabella called it his hermitage. "Is something the matter?" said Felix, when she still did not look inclined to move or speak. Irritation took over. Had she woken him from a good dream just to stand there and judge?
"You never talk about Ulrika,"
said Cat. And as soon as Felix heard that name on her lips, he groaned under his breath and looked to bury his face in his hands. He must have mumbled it in his sleep. "It's just a dream," Felix muttered into his fingers.
"Do you dream of her often?"
Felix dragged his fingers from his face. Stubble scratched his palms. Sigmar, how long had it been since he had shaved? It had been years since he had last seen Ulrika, and their involvement, even when he could still call her human, had not ended on the most cordial of terms. He took a deep breath, as if he could still smell the sweat and horse of her from his dream. His heart danced. Yet all it took was one dream. I told you that she died. I couldn't save her. I don't like to talk about it. I can't help my dreams. Kat nodded slowly, looking as though she meant to press, before hugging herself around the chest and taking strength from it. Periodically, they would have this argument, or one like it. Felix had experienced so much, while she had been struck down in her prime. Sometimes Felix forgot that it must hurt her more than it hurt him. Guilty, he turned back to his desk as though nothing was currently more crucial than unscrunching these balls of parchment and ordering them into neat piles. From behind his turned back, there came a shiver of silk as Kat shifted from the doorway. A sheet of parchment crunched underfoot. An empty bottle fell over and rolled across the carpet. Felix winced, steeling himself for a lecture.
"We missed your dinner," said Kat.
"I was busy," said Felix, indicating the sprawl of papers without looking up. Much as it might have amazed him 20 years ago, Imperial propaganda did not write itself. At the touch of a hand upon his shoulder, he softened slightly. He covered it with his own, then drew it to his lips to kiss her fingers. Kat's wrists were so thin he could see where the flesh sank between the radius and ulna bones. Felix sighed. He had spent too much time speaking with Kat's anatomists and physicians.
"You didn't come to bed again?"
Kat leaned forward, ran her fingers through his soiled cloak, and sniffed his lank blonde hair. Her nose wrinkled. Kat seemed peculiarly sensitive to bad odours lately.
"At least put some clean clothes on. You reek like a sewer."
Taking a deep breath, knowing there were things that Kat hated more than his drinking, Felix nodded towards the chart that had been tacked to the plaster wall behind his desk. To the uninitiated, it was nothing but a tangle of blue lines and strange symbols. To the more erudite, however, it would have been apparent that there was an order amongst the scrawl that resembled the layout of Altdorf's main streets. There was Karl Franz Avenue, and there Hans Josef Street. And when looked at through that lens, the gulf that split the diagram roughly into thirds could only be the confluence of the Reich and the Talabek that separated the islands of Altdorf into equivalent portions. It was the most complete map of a city's sewer system that existed anywhere in the Empire, and probably anywhere else but the dwarf holds themselves. Felix had commissioned it himself and had mapped some of it personally. More than he let on, in fact. But what Kat didn't know...
"I hope you found something this time."
Felix sighed and slumped back into his chair. He dragged a sheet of parchment, scribbled with the worst kind of populist bile he had ever seen, from the desk, scrunched it up, and idly tossed it at the map. "Nothing but rats. The sewer jacks Otto hired are either blind or every last skaven has abandoned Altdorf."
"Or they were never down there."
"Don't you start," Felix snarled. "It's bad enough that Otto still clings to that fantasy, even after what they did to Father."
"I'm not saying they don't exist," Kat snapped back. "I'm just saying that in all my years tracking beastmen, I never saw one of these ratmen."
"And just how many years was that?" Felix cut in.
"Maybe,"
said Kat, Felix's acid only making her harder.
"The city you found under Nuln was for a special purpose. Maybe after you and Gottrick defeated them, they've retreated from the Empire." "Oh, Kat!"
said Felix, raising a hand to ward off any more. Kat looked stunned, and he realized he had shouted. "I swore an oath to punish the vermin that murdered my father. It's the one thing I still have that I..." Felix caught himself and very deliberately clammed his mouth there. Kat just stared at him, willing him to say what they both knew was on his mind. His frustration was no fault of hers. She was sick. It was the guilt that poisoned him. He felt like a murderer who had cheated another into his noose on some legal technicality. After he had seen Snorri safely to Carrack Cadrin, Gotrek had honoured his own promise and released Felix from his oath. Felix had been perfectly entitled to his decision, but no one had forced him to return with Cat to his brother's charity and leave his companion to seek his doom alone. These were Felix's troubles, not Cat's. He had made an oath to her too, after all. Instead, he took a handful of parchment sheets and shuffled them loudly. "I'm sorry, Cat, but I do have real work to do as well. I wouldn't want Otto to throw me out again."
"Fine," said Cat. "But Otto and Annabella have asked after you, and I told them you would join us for breakfast. So you'd better."
"I will," Felix muttered.
"Fine,"
Cat breathed, turning to leave just as Felix's brother Otto burst through the study door.
"Felix, I..."
Otto's fleshy nose recoiled, and he drew back as though personally affronted by the odour.
"You really do live in here, don't you? I had thought that Annabella was merely exaggerating for effect."
He took a breath that set his jowls to shuddering. Unaccustomed by the exertion of limping up the two flights of stairs from his study to Felix's. Despite the hour, Otto was fully dressed in robes of velvet and brocade, accoutred with folly bells and a glittering satin sash. A gold-topped walking cane wobbled in the grip of one pudgy hand, while the other held a clutch of rain-splotched letters. Politely he bowed to Cat, an excuse to eye the improperly covered neckline of the younger woman's chemise. Not for the first time, Felix wondered whether it was only brotherly love that had behoved Otto to set aside grievances and take them in when they had turned up on his doorstep a year ago. Otto swallowed heavily, then returned his attention to Felix.
"Why are you still not dressed?"
"Because I can write as well in yesterday's clothes as in anything else."
"Yesterday's?"
said Otto, as though this was a fallacy too far.
"Is there something you wanted?"
Otto thrust one of the letters he held into Felix's hand. Felix took it and examined the handwriting. It was addressed to him. He masked his surprise well, flipping the letter over and presenting its broken seal to Otto.
"You opened it."
Otto waved the statement away.
"Do you know how much correspondence this war generates for me, Felix? Of course I opened it. I don't even read the addressee anymore, but that's not important. It's come all the way from a village called Alderfen."
"Is that meant to impress me?"
"Oh, spare me, Felix. I thought you had travelled. Alderfen is in the north of Ostermark, only days from the company offices in Badenhof."
"Oh, I see," said Felix, returning his attention to the letter and reading through narrowed eyes as Cat slid a consoling arm around Otto's elbow and hugged him to her.
"It's from Max."
Felix smiled, temporarily forgetting the both of them. He and the wizard had been romantic rivals, allies, and before the other man's summons to the von Karstein War in Sylvania, and then on again to the north, they had almost managed to become friends. Memories, it turned out, were as good a foundation for it as any. He checked the date on the letter. Nackgeheim, almost 4 months ago. Felix hoped the situation had improved since then. Max and the other magisters of his college had been called to the aid of the Supreme Patriarch himself in maintaining the Auric Bastion. It was an impregnable barrier. Gelt's great miracle that would forever end the threat of chaos to the Empire. Well, that was what the Reichsmarschall would have Felix write for the information of the masses. But Felix was wise enough to recognize a thing that was too good to be true. Felix skimmed over Max's disquisition on chamonic principles, ley lines, and ethereal harmonism. It was enough to make Felix want to bury his face in a bowl of water. Sigmar's blood. It was as if the man was right here in the room.
"No one has ever succeeded in holding chaos at bay, Felix. I do not believe that anyone has ever even thought to try, and for good reason. My colleagues and I will tread water for as long as we can. I do not know if there is safety in the South. Even here I hear rumours. But were I in your position, I would find somewhere safe and take Cat there. And I hope for your sakes that you both remember how to wield a weapon.
Felix glanced at the glass-doored cabinet on the wall that held Caracul, and folded the letter.
"This is dated months ago," said Felix, "before Gustav even left Altdorf."
I know," said Otto. "I can read, but it shows that a letter can get through."
Cat patted his hand.
"Your son will be fine."
"Of course he will,"
Otto mumbled stiffly, avoiding everybody's eye.
"He is safe and well in Badenhof, and keeping a good eye on those thieves we call distributors. It's just..."
He trailed off, then waved despairingly towards the letter in Felix's hand.
"I did more than just open it."
Felix nodded slowly. It sounded bad.
"Ask me."
The words jumped unbidden into Felix's head, fierce in sword and mail.
"Ask me, and I will go north and find my nephew."
"Anyway," said Otto, after a calming breath, "get yourself dressed. We have to go."
"Go?"
"The Reichsmarschall is conducting a public rally in Wilhelmsplatz this morning. Every guttersnipe in the Altstadt knows there's a pfennig in it for anyone who brings word of his appearances. Kurt Hellborg can't pass the gates of the castle without me hearing of it."
Otto snatched the letter from Felix's hand and waved it in the air.
"I am going to show him this and demand his news of the Kislev Verge."
Felix sighed.
What with Manfred von Karstein and his brood said to have escaped the blockade of Sylvania, with chaos on the march and rumours of strife in every human realm but the very heartlands of the Empire, Felix suspected the Reichsmarschall had enough on his plate, without caring to concern himself with one missing merchant.
He stood up all the same. Family, when it came down to it, was all he had left now.
"I don't know whether he'll be able to tell us much."
Otto scoffed, his old self again.
"Jaeger and Sons is the main provisioner of wood and cereal to the entire front. If we stop today, then tomorrow there would not be a full belly in Ostermark. Perhaps I will remind the Reichsmarschall of that too when I see him."
"Am I to stand behind you and look menacing?" said Felix.
"Nothing so terrible, Felix. Have you been working for the Reichsmarschall or not?"
"Not exactly," said Felix, mindful of the parchments scattered all over the floor.
"No more than every sword, scribe, and battle mage in the Empire. I've never even met him in person."
He shrugged.
"Considering my misspent youth, I think that's for the best." "Just get changed," said Otto,
already leading Cat away by the arm.
"And wash yourself, would you? You smell like a sewer."
The chill in the courtyard was biting. The sky was the colour of washed slate, and the wind blew dead leaves over the walls and into the garden of the townhouse. A young girl with boyish blonde hair shivered in a woolen smock as she raked them up from around the feet of the servants that bustled around Otto's best coach. They were women mostly, young and nervous-looking, supervised by a few of Otto's greyer hands. Like so many of Altdorf's young men, the bulk of Otto's household had already gone to war. The rake's iron teeth rattled across the flagstones. Not a good day to be abroad, Felix thought, only then to smile sourly at the irony. Just minutes earlier, he had been craving the wilds of Kislev. It wasn't exactly Estalia at this time of year. Wondering what was keeping Otto, Felix stamped his feet on the cobbles and wrapped himself deeper into his cloak. It was a deep blue, and though very fine, far too heavy for his own tastes. It felt like walking around with a child perpetually tugging on the back of his shirt. It was warm, though, he could not deny, lined with mink, and felt like being embraced by a cushion. With nothing much else to do while the hostlers applied the final buff to the coach's brass finishings and replaced the horse's nose bags with halter and bridle, Felix watched the girl as she obliviously raked leaves. He tried to conjure in her place an image of the lad that had done this job before her. Black hair for blonde, halberd in place of a rake, the rich cream of Reichland instead of drab homespun.
His mind rebelled. It was the mental equivalent of imposing a death's head mask over the poor girl's face. How many boys like that had signed up and gone north because of him? And for what? War and plague, the march of the dead, rumours of a man claiming to be the herald of Sigmar. If Otto heard half of the rumour that Felix had, then he would be a lot more worried about young Gustav than he was already pretending not to be.
No, 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 that's not good enough. I ordered 20 barrels. For 12, it is not even worth the haulage all the way to Hergig.
Otto limped from the house, accompanied by his butler, Fritz, and a gaggle of expensively fripperied young men that seemed to all be competing to jump on Otto's shadow.
You tell Muller I expect the rest of the consignment by tomorrow morning.
He signed a document that was pushed in front of him without reading it.
Good. See that the Count receives a half ton more grain on top of that.
Charity, Otto, said Felix.
Business,
Otto replied, shooing his assistants with an exhausted wave. Over the last 12 months, Otto had visited every town west of the Talabek, and even when at home he was up at all hours receiving agents, clients, suppliers, and the middlemen of the lot. Forget great destinies, mystic leech from artifacts of power and the changing touch of chaos. To Felix, it was abundantly obvious why the penniless rogue remained hale when the merchant grew fat, white-haired and frail.
There is money in war, but the real profit is in rebuilding. It is crucial that Jaeger and Sons be in the best position to benefit from our patriotism when the war is won.
You think it will be?
Father built the Ostermark business from the ashes of the last chaos incursion, Felix. Every few decades, it seems, they come, and every time they are sent running back. This time will be no different.
Felix wasn't sure it was that simple, but decided to keep his mouth shut. Nobody liked a doomsayer, and he should know. He had argued with enough of them over the years. All he knew was that this time it felt different. Perhaps he just got old enough that he had become one of those old men that sat in taverns nursing their favourite stein and complaining that the winters had grown colder. Taking Felix's silence as agreement, and accepting his knowledge of such things, trusting it, Otto grinned. His teeth were black from too much Lustrian sugar in his wine. One hand gripping his cane, he snapped his fingers until his butler handed him a large roll of parchment. From the plaster dust on the back and the splotches in the corners, it looked as though it had been pulled from a wall.
I wanted to show this to you before we left. Look.
With Fritz's help, he unfurled it. Felix's heart sank. It was a poster of the type commonly found nailed to village posts or to the walls at crossroads. As few men in the Empire were able to read, it was dominated by a huge illustration. It showed a gleaming phalanx of halberdiers marching towards a vast wall in the distance. The depiction of the wall was perhaps the most striking thing. It was drawn so as to appear mountainous, with a halo of power around its summit. Artistic license, perhaps, but Felix's own conversations with Max suggested more truth than fiction. The image was surrounded by small print, beneath the bold header, "Victory in the North." A little premature, Felix thought, but Otto was tapping his finger on the second of two signatures at the bottom, the one that came immediately below Kurt Helborg's. Felix sighed. When Otto had first had Felix's journals published without his knowledge, the last place he would have expected the damn things to end up was in the lap of Reichsmarschall Kurt Helborg. Apparently the name of the saviour of Nuln carried a helpful romance amongst the fennig-dreadful reading peasantry. It said, Felix Jaeger.
The servants have been collecting them,
said Otto, blind to Felix's darkening expression.
Not very civic of them, I realise, but I doubt the city will miss just one.
I'd say not, said Felix sourly.
I sometimes think that they are using them to buttress the walls in case of a siege.
Don't be prickly, Felix.
Keeping the young men of Reichland up for the fight is valuable work, and certainly worth more to Jaeger and Sons than the paltry sum they pay you to do it.
He tapped his finger on Felix's signature again,
then gave Fritz the nod to furl the poster up and take it away.
"That's the Jaeger name on every street corner and barracks of the Empire. That's what's paying your way in my house, Felix, and maintaining Katerina's donations to the Shalyan Hospice."
Feigning numb toes, Felix stamped his feet and turned his back. He closed his eyes and mumbled his own imprecation to the goddess of peace and mercy. He didn't want another argument about how much money Kat was costing his brother, and he certainly didn't want to listen to him enthuse about the number of men that Felix had coaxed to war. The heavy scuff of ill-worn leather boots made him look up. A pair of big men exited the servants' quarters under the screening maple trees and the tangle of ivy and started across the yard towards the coach. Both men were dressed in long black coats and gloves, with cudgels buckled at their hips. The first was a head taller even than Felix, broad-shouldered and with a neck like a cannonball. The second man was older, bald-headed and scarred, his muscular upper body counterbalanced by a gut that strained against his gentlemanly waistband. Felix knew professional muscle when he saw it. These were dangerous times for a merchant to be travelling, even within the borders of Reichland, which was as yet relatively untouched by war. Why, only recently, rampaging flagellants had put the torch to half of Nuln, the offices of Jaeger and Sons and Otto's own home included. Felix sighed. That city had no luck. Schrader, the senior coachman, directed his companion up to the box as he put on a tall black hat. The man tugged on the rim of his hat and opened the passenger door. Felix was in no way reassured by the show of deference. That hat and coat could not have been more intimidating on a troll.
"Ready to leave when you are, sir."
Chapter 3 Encounter in Wilhelmplatz. The steam of Felix and Otto's breath filled the closed passenger compartment as the coach clattered over the cobbles of Befelsharbour Avenue. Suppressing a shiver, Felix took a handful of cloak to smear condensation from the glass window. A mist clung to the ground, and there were few people about at this hour, except beggars and refugees from the south, homeless and frozen and with nowhere else to go. Face to the cold glass, Felix watched a black coach pull out and follow them away before disappearing into the fog. Felix shifted his attention to the colourful rank of daub and wattle shopfronts and townhouses that dragged by. Behind them lay Karl Franz Park, and the bordering trees raked the rooftop shingles. Autumn had burnished their leaves a dazzling copper. Each one shone in the low sun like a ritual blade, as the wind willed them again and again to cut. Their cultist robe rustle drowned out the dire portents of the street-corner doom-mongers and the weeping of the foreign vagrants that clung like mould to the roadside. Despair was on the air, and whether native Altdorfer or amongst the influx fleeing the wars in Tilia, Estalia, and Bretonia, the taste of it was the same. Already, men were calling these the end times. It was going to be a hard winter. Felix's natural cynicism reminded him that the priests of Ulrich and Tal and Manan made similar pronouncements every year, in the hope of extorting a few more pfennigs from those praying for a short snap and a warmer spring. This time, though, Felix believed them. The rat-catchers were up to their ankles in vermin. The geese had fled the Reich early for their southern roosts, and the chill had come early. The signs were clear, but only the most dyed-in-the-wool curmudgeons were complaining about it. Felix had first-hand experience of how powerful an ally the Kislevite winter could be, but somehow Felix doubted that this one would bring anything more than a respite. If the rumours were to be believed, that Prague and even the proud Gospodar capital, Kislev City itself, had already fallen, then the Northmen had all the shelter they needed to gather their strength until spring. Felix could not help a shiver of dread, some premonition of horror. Even the terrible Asavar Kul himself, in the great incursion 2 centuries past, had failed to broach the city of Kislev. That it had fallen now, without most men of the Empire even realizing that it had come under attack, was deeply disturbing. Doubly so, as it had been achieved without a single substantiated report of Archaon, Asavar Kul's infernal heir apparent taking to the field. Recalling the many ill-fated attempts he had made to confront the so-called ever-chosen of Chaos during his career as Gotrek's henchman, surprised him with a smile. Then he sighed, shook his head, and resumed to staring out the window. The rattling of the coach over the cobbles bumped his head against the glass. He was an idiot. There really was nothing to commend those days. Nothing at all.
"Fennig for your thoughts," said Otto.
His heavy cheeks were flushed with cold, and every so often he stamped his feet on the boards and rubbed his arms with mittened hands. Both men swayed to the right as the coach took a left turn.
"Uncharacteristically generous of you," Felix replied dryly.
A dull roar from the direction of Wilhelmplatz rose slowly over the dry whisper of the trees. It sounded like the cries of the beast-man hordes at the walls of Prague, and seemed oddly fitting to his memories. Felix watched his breath re-steam the window. Then his eyes narrowed. Using the hem of his cloak, he again wiped it clear and looked back the way they had travelled. The black coach was still with them, about a dozen lengths behind. The two horses pulling were winter white and long-haired, trotting through mist up to their shaggy fetlocks. A pair of pennons fluttered from the rear. They depicted a white bear on a frozen field. The motif was itchingly familiar, but Felix could not quite place it. His hand moved to his lap, but the reassuring touch of Karagul was not there. Merchant gentlemen, he had learned, do not carry swords. He was about to mention the coach to Otto, but his brother had reclined into the leather-backed seat and closed his eyes. Felix could not tell whether or not he was asleep. His lips were moving, but he might equally have been preparing his speech for the Reichsmarschall as dreaming. Felix looked back, but the coach was gone. The Wilhelmplatz rocked to the roar of the hundreds of peasants crowded in between the gates of the Imperial Palace and the surrounding tenements. Women in wool dresses and winter shawls screamed curses. Old men hoisted orphaned grandchildren onto their shoulders that they might share the vitriol being directed towards the mutants being paraded before them. Upon a raised wooden platform, surrounded by a double rank of halberdiers, a pack of mutants closed in on a single knight of the Reichsguard. His full silver-white plate shimmered with cold. The scarlet jupon that overlay it ruffled in rhythm to his footwork, the rampant griffin of the House of Wilhelm rending the air with claws of gold thread. The man had on an open bassinet, his face tanned, and wore a trimmed black beard and a broad smile. The pitch of the mob grew fevered as the knight danced from a mutant's clutches, swung his sword in a bravura flourish, and rounded on a second with a cry.
"Not exactly Vondale, is it?"
Felix yelled, citing the great playwright as the halberdiers ushered another trio of mutants onto the stage, stuffed limbs swinging from bloated costumes as they walked. There was a gathered hiss as one flailing limb forced the knight to duck, then a roar when he came up grinning, saluted the crowd and set about the poor actor with the flat of his blade. The crowd jeered as the mutant stepped on the oversized foot of its own costume and crashed onto the stage. The knight planted one foot on the body, raising one clenched fist in triumph. On cue, the square erupted with laughter and mocking cheers, the high stone walls of the Imperial Palace providing a thunderous acoustic return. All eyes were on the tableau being enacted on stage, but Felix felt certain he was being watched, and it was making him nervous. Bowmen, liveried in the red and blue of Altdorf, kept watch from the palace's sprawling ramparts, while swordsmen in feathered sallets and padded hauberks patrolled the perimeter of the heaving square. The approaches were blocked by units of halberdiers, large weapons gleaming, as the soldiers searched carriages and held up foot traffic. Spilling out of the White Lady Tavern just out of the square, along Downfeather Alley, a group of drunken adolescents hurled abuse at the picket of halberdiers. The soldiers ignored it, but Felix saw the bowmen in the nearby windows shifting their aim.
and he did not doubt that there would be plainclothes Kaiserjäger following those boys home after the rally, probably with conscription papers handily pre-signed by the Reichsmarshal himself. "You realize I'm still technically a wanted felon," said Felix, eyeing the nearest unit of swordsmen warily. "Oh, nobody cares, Felix," Otto replied, yelling directly into Felix's ear. Felix gave a tight smile. He did often wonder if his current employers had the faintest idea that he had been dodging imperial justice for the past 2 decades, following his role in the window tax riots. Probably not. Most of the officers in Wilhelmplatz today, up to and including the Reichsguard on the stage, looked like they would not even have been born when Felix had been breaking windows and generally making a nuisance of himself. Simpler times, he thought, suddenly feeling very old indeed. There was a reason that nobody remembered the window tax riots anymore. Like Felix himself, they were simply not that important.
"Pay attention now, Felix."
Otto's voice was water-thin under the oceanic roar of the crowd. Schrader and the even larger coachman stood either side of him, and the peasants wisely gave them a wide berth.
"I'm going to catch the Reichsmarshal before he takes the stage himself. You stay here and keep an eye out."
"For what?" Felix called back. But Otto and his men were already off. Felix swore, a prickling scrutiny on the nape of his neck growing ever so slightly more urgent now that they were gone. A tumultuous cheer filled the square, and Felix's attention was drawn along with everyone else's to the stage. The knight had just tripped one of the mutants and pushed him into his companion, causing them both to roll off the stage and land on top of each other in a heap. Only the surrounding box of halberdiers held the baying mob back. They beat at their breasts and screamed slogans into the soldiers' faces. With a sick realization, Felix recognized the ones that he had written himself. Some kind of collective madness had them. Surely even the dimmest villain knew that those mutants were just players in padded costumes. Felix scanned the crowd. Something about it all made his skin crawl, reminding him of the summers spent at the family logging camps in the Drachwald. He had used to watch the forest from the house as he watched these men now, convinced utterly that something hidden lurked there. From the Kaisergarten entrance, just to the left of the road that he and Otto had taken, the picket of halberdiers waved through a black coach. A chill passed through him. No, not just any black coach. It was the exact same black coach that he had seen before. The white bear pennons fluttered in the storm of noise like topgallants in a gale. Feeling a nervous itch crawling up from his chest, Felix watched the coach pull into a roped-off enclosure. Dozens of other coaches were parked there, worthies attended by Altdorfer soldiery and by gruff-looking heavies in an array of heraldic surcoats. The horses nuzzled each other and wickered their own reassurances against the commotion. Felix recognized the heraldries of Nuln, Stirland, and Ostermark, mainly because of the amount of time he had spent in and around the guardhouses and jails of those states over the years. But most he did not recognize. The driver jumped down from the box to open the passenger door, but Felix could not see who emerged, for all of the rippling bannerolls and halberds in the way. He cursed, then shuddered, that feeling again, and crossed his arms under his cloak. An animal scream from behind made him start. Felix turned, shivering off his unease, to find a gang of young bravos had clambered onto Otto's wagon. They shook it and screamed like Arabian monkeys. One of them danced with bottle in hand from the box. They all wore the red and blue ribbons of the newly enlisted around their sleeves, and, doubtless encouraged by the free spirits of a grateful city's innkeepers, were all uproariously drunk. While Felix felt no great enchantment towards Otto's property, the men were clearly spooking the horses. The father of the two threw its mane as it fought against the tracer in a vain bid to back into the chassis of the coach. The nearer horse merely trembled, wide-eyed and staring, as if it had just smelled a wolf. Out of habit, Felix swept his cloak over his left shoulder to free his sword arm.
even after all this time. Caragul's absence just felt wrong. He shook his head ruefully. There was nothing like a sword to decloud sotted minds, but he doubted this situation called for it. He started forward. At least he had meant to. The crowd roared, oblivious to the revelation that his feet were rooted to the ground as though glued to the cobbles. Felix gasped as he tried again, and failed. Grabbing one leg in both hands by the knee, he tried to pull it, but it did not move an inch. He was sweating now, despite the cold, yet absurdly grateful that his arms at least had done as he had asked. He had felt them as they touched his thigh. His legs were fine. They simply would not move. A piercing laugh made him look up. One of the young men had tripped over his own ankles and fallen off the top of the coach, to the great mirth of his comrades. Felix grit his teeth and tried to push himself through whatever was preventing him. It was not so much that he failed as that his legs refused to try. Shaking the muscle of his thigh under one hand, he fought down a rising panic. It could not be that gang of drunks. What in Sigmar's name was going on?
"Forget Wagonjäger,"
came a guttural but deliberately precise voice from the crowd behind him, right where the poor horse directed its terror.
"Only give yourself nosebleed, and maybe attract soldiers. Not want to attract soldiers, yeah?"
Unconsciously, Felix's gaze found the troop of state swordsmen that had unnerved him so just moments before.
"Do I not?" "No," said the hidden man. "I not come all this way to harm, Empire men."
For some unfathomable reason, Felix laughed. Why did he find that so difficult to believe? Bracing himself for the effort of turning, he was surprised to find it easy. He barely even had to think about it before his feet were shuffling him around to greet a short man in brightly coloured fleece breeches and coat and a hemp cloak. His eyes were narrowed, his skin walnut hard and of a hue that looked mildly jaundiced, but for the absence of any other obvious symptoms. His bowed gait indicated a man more accustomed to riding than to walking. Now Felix placed the odd accent, as plainly Kislevite as the drooping moustache on the man's face and the mink-flapped chapka on his head. He was one of the Ungol nomads that subsisted on the northern oblast and the troll country. Had subsisted. Felix tried to raise a hand in greeting, found he could not. He grimaced.
"Do I know you?" "You are Jaeger, yeah? You are, how you say in Empire, friend of my friend."
Some friend, Felix thought, struggling increasingly desperately to move an arm, a leg, anything. But all he seemed capable of controlling was his eyes and his mouth. Only the certain knowledge that he was utterly under this strange man's power kept his tone civil as he asked, "Who?"
"My lady, you remember?"
The Ungol smiled, teeth starkly white against his tanned skin. Something was coming. Felix could sense the darkness of it spread through the subliminal unease of the crowd. Behind him, the horse whinnied in terror. It was a wiser beast than the fools around it gave credit for. A sense of recognition thrilled through the will that bound Felix's body, like dogs with prey and excited by the approach of their master. What was worse, Felix thought he recognized it too. He stopped fighting, surrendering to that itch that had crept from his chest and now hid like a spider at the back of his mind. It could not be. The Ungol stepped aside and dropped to one knee.
"I present my lady, the Boyarina Magdova Stragov."
The crowd seemed to fade, the brightly clothed Ungol receding into it, and Felix was dreaming again. At least that was his best explanation for it. She looked exactly as Felix remembered her. A sleeveless jerkin worn over a white linen shirt, leather breeches cinched at the waist with a studded belt, long legs encased to the knee within fur-edged riding boots. A long cavalry sabre was sheathed in a leather scabbard at her hip. The only incongruity was the black widow's veil and long leather gloves that she wore to shade her skin from the sun,
But despite the layers between them, Felix could still make out the pale skin, the high cheekbones, and those wide almond eyes.
"You are not going to scream, are you, Felix?"
said Ulrika, breaking the spell.
"It would not be very attractive."
She glided nearer, then brushed back his overlong fringe with the back of her hand, as if to see him better. Felix's skin tingled at her touch. Belatedly, the thought arose that he should tell her to stop. But then her fingers nipped something in his hair. He felt a pinch. Then she yanked sharply back.
"Ow!"
Ulrika presented the pale strand tweezered between forefinger and thumb. Her eyes sparkled with amusement.
"A grey hair, Felix?"
"Keep it," said Felix. "I've plenty more." He rubbed the sore spot on his head, realizing only then that he was free to move again. He held his hand out, gave the fingers an experimental flex. The last time he had seen Ulrika had been in Nuln over 2 years ago, before his and Kat's paths had crossed. If she had had this kind of power then, she had kept it to herself.
"I apologize for the entrance," she said,
setting her hands on her hips and angling her jaw proudly upwards. Without meaning to, Felix smiled. He had seen that posture all too often when they fought, and Sigmar had they fought, with Ulrika acting every inch the spoiled boyar's daughter who could think no wrong.
"But you were the one about to fight six men half his age."
"Half our age," Felix corrected. "And I could still have taken them, thank you very much."
"I don't doubt it."
Felix watched her for a moment, trying to determine if she was teasing him, sorely tempted to remind her who had ended up with their backside on the floor more often than not when the two of them had sparred. He looked again at his hand and tested the fingers once more. Of course, that had been then. He shook his head with a sigh. "It's good to see you, Ulrika. Truly. But you could have just called for me at my house like a normal person."
"I wanted to speak to you alone,"
said Ulrika, indicating the screaming crowds packed in all around them, the drunkards still jeering at those below from atop Otto's coach.
"I thought a public place would be best, and..."
Her husky voice took on a nasal quality.
"Every guttersnipe in the Alstead knows there's a pfennig for anyone bringing word of Hellborg's appearances."
Felix chuckled at the surprisingly passable imitation of his brother. Then an odd chill stole it away. Ulrika had never met Otto, at least not to his knowledge. With a smile, Ulrika tucked a copper coin into Felix's cloak, where it was creased at the collar, and laid her hand on his chest. His heart kicked.
"I need you to stop looking at me like you have just seen a vampire in the middle of Wilhelmplatz."
She moved in, nodding to his left and to his right, and breathing kisses on his cheeks in the Bretonian manner.
"People see a war widow and her lover, and I have learned that it pays to keep up appearances."
Felix swallowed. The gauze of her veil brushed his unshaven chin. He barely dared breathe, lest he smell her. Glancing over his shoulders as she indicated, he saw a wall of bodies, a blur of blind noise. No one was paying either of them the slightest attention that Felix could make out. But then he hadn't a vampire's senses, or their paranoia. While his head was turned, Ulrika came the rest of the way, leaning her body into his and wrapping her arms around his neck. Felix's pulse quickened, but to his impotent shame, he did nothing to resist her. It had been a long time. She was colder than she had been, harder, and eerily still where a heart had once beat. And yet her body's every contour and curve was as he remembered. Even the scent of her hair was familiar.
"Marriage has made you prudish, Felix."
Ulrika took his hand in a grip that was in every way irresistible, and clasped it to her hip. Felix smiled nervously, apologetically, though he wasn't sure for what. A tremor took up in his hands. Desire? Guilt? He tried not to look at the wedding ring that nuzzled against Ulrika's hip. He looked away, closed his eyes, cupped his other hand behind Ulrika's shoulder, and told himself that it was all just an act.
"Nay,"
Ulrika whispered.
That was not so bad now, was it?
What do you want? Said Felix, eyes still closed, trying not to think about the lips separated from his by nothing but a thin layer of fabric. He tried to think of the fangs those lips hid, but it didn't help.
Please tell me that you're dropping by during the largest chaos incursion since Magnus's time is just a coincidence.
Try the largest since Snorri Whitebeard's time, said Ulrika,
clutching him as though to impress upon him something of deadly import.
It is already far worse in the north than you can conceive.
Felix nodded, found himself stroking her veiled head without realizing it.
I heard what became of Kislev. I'm so sorry.
What with Sylvania, it all just happened so quickly. Ulrika waved away his platitudes with a shake of the head.
It does not matter. As my father would have said, were he alive.
She pushed him back just slightly, enough only to encourage Felix to open his eyes and look into hers.
I have come about Max.
Max?
Yes.
Ulrika dropped her gaze.
The Auric Bastion is still weak at Aldafen, and despite the best efforts of Max and his brethren, it is under constant attack. It took me 2 weeks to get here, Felix. That is how long it has been since Max fell.
Felix felt the bottom fall out of his chest. Max could not be dead. There were certain people in this world that Felix had, without quite realizing it, come to believe were invulnerable. Gotrek was one, and Max was another. The idea of him falling in some dismal corner of Ostermark while Felix drank himself stupid and dreamt that he was there just twisted the knife.
He fell, yes, to a mounted raid, along with every other priest and wizard the marauders could lay their hands on before being driven back into Kislev. But he is not dead. Don't ask me how I know that, but I am convinced he was taken alive for a reason. It is difficult even for me to get news from north of the Auric Bastion, but a new warlord establishes himself in Prague and has been scouring Kislev of sorcerers for months. He calls himself the Troll King. That, I believe, is where Max and his fellows have been taken. And I want you to help me get him back.
Felix had to keep his mouth shut to avoid saying yes right away. She was offering him everything he had been yearning for, everything that had been missing since he and Gotrek had gone their separate ways. His ever-reliable inner cynic told him that, of course, Ulrika would know that. He would not be surprised if she could recite the contents of every fabricated war report he had ever written for the Criers, and knew the name of every sewer jack with whom he relived his glory days, and where to find the taverns in which he would blast his mind with cheap schnapps afterwards. Max and Gotrek were the heroes. Felix was just a failed poet with a magic sword. He wasn't the same man who had left his life at the drop of a drunken pledge to a troll slayer and spent the next 2 decades gallivanting through horrors that most men would prefer to pretend could not exist. He had responsibilities now, and aches in places that he would prefer to pretend could not exist. Otto would not take him back again if he ran off now, and Cat... The autumn light that reflected off the ring on his second finger struck him like a bucket of cold water.
I can't go with you.
Max risked his life to save mine from the plague. Do you remember? And after that he raced across half of the old world to rescue me from Aldolfus Krieger.
As did I, said Felix defensively.
Yes, did you,
Ulrika echoed.
Do you value Max's life that much less than mine?
The words stung, as they had been meant to. Felix felt a flickering ember of resentment amongst the confusion of passions. Had the choice been solely his, he would have left Altdorf with Max from the outset. Had it been up to him, he would probably be dead in a field somewhere in Ostermark by now. For some reason, that thought did not trouble him. In his heart of hearts, he knew that he was never meant for any other kind of end.
If your positions were reversed, I would tell him the same.
It is your work.
Her face was a mask, but her voice sneered.
Do you know how pathetic your odes to the green fields of Reckland and the goodness of Emperor Karl Franz look in Hergig or Beckerfen? Do you know the lengths they must go to maintain an army that can still fight? The bargains they have been forced to make? Even I now have the field rank of general in the state of Ostermark. You think they care what I am, as much as what I can bring to the field? Do you think they even want to know?
When Felix did not react, she went on.
Is it your hunt for the rat that killed your father, then?
Felix did tighten his grip on her shoulder at that. An image of his father brutalized and killed in his bed flashed through his mind. Part of him had been glad when the flagellants had burned that house down.
You will find nothing. The Skaven have abandoned their northern holdings for some ploy in the south. I do not know what or where, so don't ask.
Her mocking tone became gentle.
You are meant for better things than skulking around sewers and trying to hide the stink from your wife. Help me. Help Max.
I told you I can't. And not for those reasons.
Ah, yes. The lovely Katerina Jaeger. You're a living cliché, you know. Taking a girl young enough to be your daughter.
Young enough to be our daughter, Felix cut in reflexively, and immediately winced at how those words sounded out loud. Ulrika looked away coyly, but Felix could see that she was smiling.
The world does not work like one of those dreadful Detlev Sieck plays you used to recite for me. The damsel does not recover simply because she has her prince.
She shook her head and slowly peeled herself from his embrace.
You will not find a physician in Altdorf wise enough in forbidden lore to undo Kembler's necromancy. But I?
Felix's entire ribcage constricted and froze.
She could cure Kat.
Or was she just offering him what he wanted to hear?
Are you promising me something?
Find me in the Black Rose on Leopold Avenue tonight,
said Ulrika, signalling to her man that she was ready to go. Felix blinked, as though tricked by some cunning sleight of hand, as the Ungol and his brightly coloured fleece coat reappeared in his vision.
And it must be tonight. I will be gone by dawn. I am already 2 weeks behind Max's captors, and it is a long road back to Badenhof.
Felix looked to the ground and smiled. In other circumstances, he might even have laughed. Ulrika had thought of everything that might sway him, boxed it neatly for him, and tied it off with a sweet little bow. He sighed. Fine. He'd take a peek.
Badenhof?
The Ungol drew a sealed letter from his coat. He displayed the wax Jaeger and Son's seal for a moment, and then slid it back into the fleece pocket.
It appears that your nephew, Gustav, has been having difficulties with the local lord, and requests the experience of his knavish uncle in resolving them. Join me tonight, Felix, and I will ensure that Otto receives this letter, and the message that you departed at once to help him. Neither he nor Katerina will suspect.
I still don't know. I'd have to be sure that Kat is looked after.
Ulrika closed her eyes and was still. It might have been a sigh, but of course Ulrika's lungs had not expelled air in over 20 years.
And if she could be made strong again? So she could look after herself?
What are you suggesting? Ulrika smiled and made to withdraw.
Max saved her life as well, Felix. I am suggesting that she might want her own say in this decision.
Ulrika strode through the crowd, bodies sighing from her path like grass before a night wind. Until only recently, she would have been able to move amongst the flock as one of them, but now her passage was marked by goosebumps and shudders, hammers stutteringly drawn across